Hello all, welcome to Pyramid Podcast, where three lads discuss all things the English football pyramid. On today's episode, we'll take a look at Lee Carsey's first England squad with some surprise additions. We'll discuss some of the big transfers happening ahead of the deadline on Friday night. Why have they changed the Carabao Cup draw to benefit the European teams? And we'll finish with an EFL and National League roundup. I'm your host, Alex Murphy, and once again, I'm joined by Tom Gallagher and Tom Lawrence. Boys, let's start with the England squad. Lauro, a few new unexpected faces, I'd say, including Morgan Gibbs-White, Angel Gomez and Nonny Madueke, called up for Lee Carsley, and a bit of a different look to the squad this time.
Yeah, boring and crap. I wouldn't take too much notice of it. It's the Nations League, and obviously we've got a number of players out injured. But if that squad's anything like what we're going to be taking to the World Cup in 2 years, I'd be really frightened. So I think probably take it with a pinch of salt. And obviously there might be some opportunities for some lads that haven't played before. I'm happy to see Tino Livramento in there because I think he's a really good player. But the likes of Angel Gomez and Morgan Gibbs-White going, I'm not too sure that's going to be of the calibre to take us forward. And Nonny Madueke, I guess, is in there because he's got a hat-trick at the weekend, which may not bode well for Lee Carsley's selection forte in the future. But I'm just bored looking at that England squad. I've had enough of England this year now. Having had time to reflect, they've let me down. And, new manager will come in due course, whether that's Lee Carsley or whether that's someone new. But this squad is, doesn't fill me with joy, so we'll see.
Tomo, obviously looking at the squad, looks like some people have been left out as well. We've obviously had Kieran Trippier announced that he's retiring from international football. Kyle Walker's not in there. And obviously no Luke Shaw either. And it doesn't look like any sort of left-back to me, recognised left-back. Do you think Livramento's coming in to play that role? Do you think Levi Colwell might play out there? What do you reckon his thinking is there?
I think we're desperately short of left backs in this country. If our two main fullbacks are Ben Chilwell and Luke Shaw, we're in a bit of trouble there, aren't we? Really, Tino Livramento's demonstrated he can play there for Newcastle to a pretty decent level, but going forward, I'd like to see a left footer there. Whether that's Levi Colwell, I'm not sure. Levi Colwell's not. I think Levi Colwell's basically in the squad because he was part of Lee Carsley's under 21 squad that won the Euros a couple summers ago. Maybe it might have been last summer. And same goes for the likes of Morgan Gibbs-White and Angel Gomez. So they're not really any big surprises in those inclusions, just because Lee Carsley's worked with those players before. They know what he's like. He knows what they're like. And I guess he's trying to stamp his authority a little bit on the squad. A couple of points I did want to make that I think are quite interesting. One, and maybe quite boring actually, but you guys be the judge of that. Like, the England squad gets announced and it's announced as a graphic, and quite often the likes of Trent Alexander-Arnold is put in midfield, Cole Palmer and Phil Foden will be put up front. Whereas in this England squad, Trent's been put in back in defence and Cole Palmer and Phil Foden have been put in centre mid, which makes me think that's kind of Lee Carsley's way of saying, look, I think we can get all these attacking players and all these players that are quality on the ball on the pitch. So that's a little sign there. And then one more interesting thing I'd just like to say is Ben White's admission as well. He got asked, Lee Carsley, in the press conference today, what was that about? Was that because Ben White, like, you don't think Ben White's any good or blah, blah, blah? And basically he replied and said that Ben White has made himself unavailable again. So moving forward from Ben White, I think that's basically his international career over, because we all thought that it was the Gareth Southgate and his assistant, whose name evades me, when they had a little fallout, we all thought it might be that reason. But it seems like he just only fancies playing for Arsenal, doesn't fancy playing for his country at all.
But we're going to play Trent at right back, I'm taking now, with Kyle Walker's omission. So I know we're a little bit short at centre back as well, when you look past the kind of likes of Stones and Maguire's back into the squad. I know you've got the likes of Guy who did well and Konzu did well, but you think Ben White would potentially have had a chance of playing at centre back, albeit he is a right back for Arsenal. But I'm guessing Trent's going to play in the the right back role. But yeah, what was a very settled England defence a few years ago now looks a little bit odds and sods to me with, you know, if Walker's potentially coming towards his international career, Trippier is, probably Stones, Maguire coming to up towards their one of their last tournaments as well. No recognised left back who can stay fit. Bit of a worry long term for England. I don't think they'll have too many issues against Republic of Ireland and Finland and Greece in the Nations League, but maybe a little bit more long term, some potential issues there.
How have we not got a left back? If I'm a utility player or someone coming through a big club or even a championship club at the minute and I'm English, I'm going, Gaffer, I'm a left back. And I'm honing in on my trade at left back because I know that I can't even think of anyone that should be there. Obviously, Luke Shaw, if he's fit, Chilwell, I don't think he'll ever play for England again unless he has a major kind of Indian summer in his mid to late 20s at his next club. He obviously doesn't fancy like Tyreek Mitchell, who's a left back. Rico Henry, been injured for a long time. There's no one really, is there? There must be someone like... Is Leif Davis English?
Yeah.
So that could be... Why is he not in the squad?
Well, Leif Davis has been... He's come up to Premier League level and he's been found out a couple of times in the first few games. But you're right. But actually, it's not just English left backs. It's... If you look at sort of world football, there's a dearth of quality in the left back position. Like, give me five absolutely world-class left-backs. There's not really. When you look at, say, the two best clubs in English football, Arsenal and Man City, they play centre-backs at left-back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Calafiori. And then you've got Ake or you've got Guardiola. Mm. So there's a dearth of quality in the left-back position, but you are right. Going forward, you've got the likes of Leif Davis, who's obviously still very young, had a brilliant season for Ipswich last year. Lewis Hall, I think he's only 19. He's obviously got the potential to be that next one. And then if you're looking even further down the pecking order or down the youth academy, you've got Harry Amass coming through at Man United. He's only 17. So maybe, but he'll obviously won't be ready for the 2026 World Cup, I doubt.
No. Slightly harsh on Leif Davis saying he's been found out. I believe the two fixtures Ipswich have had so far have been Liverpool and Manchester City, so let's give him a little bit more time. But if we're putting the likes of Morgan Gibbs-White and Angel, I mean, Angel Gomez, am I missing something there? Has he been like balling abroad or something?
Yeah, he's played really well for Lille over the last 12 months, but I actually think the main reason for his inclusion is because he was a Lee Carsley player in that under-21 squad and he did very well. It's not to say he's played quite well at Lille, but I wouldn't say he's done anything superstardom. Otherwise, you would have thought any of the big clubs would come in for him this summer and sign him. Mm. So
I think the admission of Adam Wharton's an interesting one as well, because he's obviously highly rated. He's just been taken to the Euros, albeit not played. You would have thought he'd have maybe had a claim to stake in the next couple of years to try and forge his way into that midfield. But yeah, Lee Carsley's left him out. So I think. My sort of negative disposition here is based on the fact that Lee Carsley, for me, is unbelievably unqualified. I know Southgate kind of was when he came in, but at least he'd been a proper Premier League manager before. The only time I can remember Lee Carsley being a manager was a caretaker at Birmingham, maybe a little stint at Brentford, but neither fill me with massive joy that he's got the credentials to take England on to the next level. So proof will be in the pudding there.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Laurie, but at international level these days, you look at the Spain manager who's just taken them to the Euros victory. I think he was their under-21s coach, and before that he was their under-18s coach and under-19s coach, and he just went through the age group. So it feels like international football, you don't particularly need like those elite-level, world-class coaches to succeed. So, and obviously Carsley, at under-21 level, did win the Euros. So,
yeah.
In that respect, he's definitely qualified to get the interim job. And if he impresses, then I guess the job's his.
If Lee Carsley can coach this England team the way that Spain's coach managed to get them playing in the Euros, then I'll hold my hands up and bow down to Senor Lee. But for the time being, I'm slightly precarious, I think, of what's to come. But we'll see.
I've seen that the FA have signed off on the fact that they'd be comfortable with England having a foreign manager in the future or next. So I wonder whether there's a couple names that they've shortlisted who've either just finished up in club football or in club football and asked for a little bit more time or something like that. And Carsley's going to have these Nation Leagues games while they're happening. And by the time we get round to a major tournament, we'll have a big international manager in charge. But even if he does do really well, like if he beats it, the best that he can do right is in these Nation Leagues is to blow away Republic of Ireland, Greece and Finland. I'm still not sure that wins anyone over because I imagine Pyramid Pod could go up and go to the Aviva in Dublin and beat Republic of Ireland as managers. But yeah, I just wonder whether there's a big name coming, a foreign name.
A foreign name being either Pep Guardiola or Jurgen Klopp. And obviously you'd have to wait until at least next summer for that to happen. But given that there's no really serious international football between now and then, and then you've got a year's build up to the 2026 World Cup, it is possible. And I think maybe the FA are hoping that could happen.
Or Eddie Howe, who maybe not getting on as well with his director of football since Matey left to go to Man United. I think someone Mitchell's in there now, and I think he's maybe got a tighter grasp on what's happening than Eddie Howe was allowed into before. But I'd sign off on a foreign manager as well. I always thought I'd just be England, England, England. But I mean, look at the outpouring of love for, and God rest his soul, Sven-Göran Eriksson this week. I look back with fond memories of Sven's time, other than the fact that we majorly underperformed in a couple of big games at tournaments. We've done that since anyway. But he kind of captured the imagination as an England manager. So someone of that mould I'd be happy with again. Or I suppose Eddie Howe. Pep Guardiola would be an interesting one. So I saw someone on Twitter that we know point out recently that he's not actually been fantastic in tournament football for Manchester City at the top level. It took him a long time to win the Champions League and has underperformed in that a little bit before. So that'd be interesting, but maybe one for another day.
Yeah. I wonder how much time he needs with players, Pep. Like, he's so like on top of everything at the training ground and regimenting them into a style of play, and you know, everything's like done to the nth degree. International football is a little bit different, isn't it? Where you've got 2-3 week camps with players in sort of three, four month intervals. So it might be slightly different for international football. But look, I'm not saying I wouldn't have Pep at England, because I definitely would. But yeah, could be a bit of a different proposition. Just one final bit I wanted to touch on before we move on for the England squad, boys, as well, is Jack Grealish back in the squad. He's only actually had sort of 17, 18 minutes of football, I think, for City so far this season. He's struggling to get on the pitch ahead of the likes of Doku and Savinho, who's obviously started okay. But do you think, Tommy, that's just a shortage of potential like left-winger options for Grealish to come into the squad again?
Not really. I think we're not short in attacking areas at all, to be honest. I think that's probably just one of those ones where Lee Carsley's gone, I would have taken Grealish in the summer. And he disagreed with Gareth Southgate on that respect. And he would have taken Grealish. He probably prefers Grealish over, I don't know who's dropped out instead of Grealish. Oh, Ivan Toney's not there. But yeah, it's almost like moot. It doesn't really matter, does it? But yeah, Grealish, to be fair to him, he had a really good pre-season and then just got a little niggle on the eve of the season. So, he'll be hoping he can get back into the City team and then obviously then play for England next month.
Yeah, and obviously we got Jude injured as well. So he's obviously one of the first names on the England team sheet now. So an opportunity there for some of those boys that you have potentially been counted as midfielders, Tom, as you say, Palmer and Foden, to potentially play there rather than out wide in that 10 role in front of the likes of Kobbie Mainoo and Declan Rice, and obviously Conor Gallagher, who's moved to Madrid, Atletico Madrid, included in the squad as well. So, yeah, can't say I'm buzzing for those games, not particularly mouthwatering fixtures, but be interesting to see what Carsley does with his team selection for it. Boys, looking ahead and moving on from England to deadline day, obviously Friday 30th of August for deadline day. I think it's 11 PM UK time, is it, that the window closes. Be a busy day for you, Tomo. But one move that's already gone ahead is Chiesa to Liverpool for £10 million. Now, I remember watching him for Italy in a previous tournament. He looked like he was going to be one of the best wingers on the planet. How have Liverpool managed to get hold of him for £10 million or €30 million? Seems a bit too good to be true to me.
Yeah, well, there's a couple reasons for that. One, he's basically been exiled by the new Juventus manager, Thiago Motta. He was one of Juventus' highest paid players. He's only got 1 year left on his contract. I don't think, and the reason why they weren't overly keen on keeping him and offering him a new contract at those terms is because he's just been injured all the time. And ever since that Euros where he lit it up, really, I've just got his injury record up here. So since 2021-22 season, he's missed 420 days of football through injury, and he's missed 80 games. So there's no denying there's a lot of talent in there. He's a really likable guy. He's a really likable footballer. He works his socks off. He's quick. He's obviously a good player, but the risk is obviously just him staying fit. Now, at 10 million, is it a big risk? I don't think so. He'll probably go to Liverpool. He won't be one of their big, big top earners. He'll be on decent whack. But for me, it seems like a no-brainer for Liverpool at that price. And look, if he can, sometimes injury-prone players go through 3 or 4 seasons where they're just getting niggles and picking up niggles, and then all of a sudden their body learns to cope with the demands and then they can play. So if he can stay fit and play, I wouldn't put it past him to be in their starting 11 by November, December time, if he can stay fit, because he's definitely got the quality as long as he can put a string of games together.
And Laura, adding him to, well, if you take their first front three as Jota, Diaz and Salah at the minute, you're adding that to Darwin Nunez, Cody Gakpo and now Chiesa. Not a bad little front six that for Slot, who seems to have started life very brightly at Liverpool.
Hmm. I agree with the, I think the £10 million price tag, the risk reward, you know, favours the move, doesn't it? And it reminds me a little bit of, I know they're different players, but Klopp bought in Shaqiri, didn't he? And sort of used him sparingly off the bench and gave them a little bit of quality, maybe in the last half hour of games, and just something different. And maybe he'll be used like that. And the upside is maybe he gets a run injury free. And if he's good enough to start in that team, and if he can show the form that he was showing in the, I think it was the last Euros where we saw him live in the semi-finals against Spain, scored that wonderful goal, then what a player that they've got at that price. So the upside is very big. And obviously we'll come on to it later. But yeah, good start for Arne Slot and a first real test this weekend.
Yeah, we'll see how he gets on, Chiesa. Laurie, want to move on to a goalkeeper now in Aaron Ramsdale. So looks like he's going to move to Southampton. I don't know if that moves at the when we're doing this podcast is completed or on the cusp of it. But I think for Aaron Ramsdale, maybe, you know, this time a year and a half ago, he'd have hoped that by now he'd be a Premier League winner with Arsenal, an established number one there, and hopefully taken over the England number one and just had a successful Euros. But with a move to Southampton, not in the England squad this time round, potentially going to be a Championship goalkeeper next season. Why do you think he's gone to Southampton?
Yeah, obviously big leap to say maybe a Championship goalkeeper next season. Southampton fans won't like that one. But I think a couple of things for Ramsdale. One is I think Arsenal have pigeonholed him a little bit as not being the kind of sexy ball-playing goalkeeper that the top side seem to want now. David Raya's obviously got a more exotic-sounding name and is maybe more less risk-averse with the ball at his feet and plays it out a bit more in Arteta. And he's done well at Arsenal, to be fair, and Arteta's favoured him. So all of a sudden, are the top clubs looking and thinking, well, if he can't start for Arsenal, he's not starting for us. I think the other side of that is that maybe a lot of the big clubs have spent big money on goalkeepers in the last year or two. Man United have bought in Onana, Vicario at Tottenham. Chelsea have got about 6 goalkeepers. So you're sort of looking down the league and thinking, where does he end up? Now, I wouldn't have said it was going to be as far down as Southampton. You would have thought like a West Ham or maybe a Newcastle with, you know, Nick Pope's problems over the last year and things like that. So surprising he's gone that low. And you're right, he's not going to want a third Premier League relegation on his CV. I think he's already gone down with Bournemouth and Sheffield United. And one of our mates in the group chat last night said, wouldn't you rather stay at Arsenal and his stock will be higher at the end of the year rather than having a tough season with Southampton? But I expect kind of top level at athletes will have the outlook of, I just want to play, and they won't be thinking of getting relegated. Aaron Ramsdale will be thinking of going to Southampton and trying to do well. And the other thing is, it's an amazing signing for Southampton. Bit of a game changer for them. If he can earn them 5 extra points than what they were going to get without him, that could be the difference between being a Premier League and a Championship club next season. So, interesting signing, but I think it's one that is good optics really for Ramsdale, because it shows he wants to play football. And again, fantastic coup for the Saints and Russell Martin.
And I guess from an England squad perspective, Jordan Pickford shows you don't necessarily have to be at a top team to be your country's number one. And probably he gets more highlights, Jordan Pickford, from being sat behind Everton's leaky defence rather than just spraying the ball about for a top team. So Ramsdale will probably be thinking he can actually go and be a goalkeeper and show what he's good at, which is the shot stopping and you know, worry less about the distribution. Albeit I know Russell Martin does like to implement a style of play, but it might be that move actually does him some good, being for a team that he can just concentrate on being a goalkeeper and a shot stopper.
And if you look at most of the keepers that we normally pick in our England squads, you know, you're right, Jordan Pickford's had the number one spot for the last 8 years, but who else? Nick Pope, who's had backs against the wall kind of jobs at Burnley and a lot of his time at Newcastle, the likes of Henderson. Very rarely we have like a top club goalkeeper. Even David James back in the day wasn't necessarily a top four goalkeeper. I'd probably go back to David Seaman to find someone that was starting week in, week out for one of the top sides in the Premier League for England. So internationally, I don't think it'll affect that much in a negative way, probably quite the opposite.
What I do think this move sort of highlights is how, if you cast your mind back to this time last year, we were talking about the David Raya, Aaron Ramsdale situation at Arsenal pretty much every single week, weren't we? And I think it highlights to me that Arteta has been proven right. I think David Raya was named in the PFA Team of the Year, wasn't he? Whether or not you agree with that sort of nomination or not, can't deny he had a pretty good season considering he started kind of iffy. Obviously, Aaron Ramsdale not being in the team all season last year, he is available and available at a pretty low price, and no clubs in the top 15 in the top 17 clubs in the Premier League came in for him at that price. I think Wolves were the only viable alternative to Southampton. But obviously Southampton getting a deal over the line because they wanted to pay the 18 million fee. I think it's a good deal all round. Ramsdale obviously goes, gets to play. He's not in the England squad at the minute, but if he plays and plays well, like you said, he's definitely got a chance to be in that England squad. And then 18 million fee for Arsenal, for their second choice goalkeeper. Good deal all round.
I don't agree that Mikel Arteta has been proven right with the goalkeeping decision. I believe the goal at the outset of the start of last season was for Arsenal to win the league, and they came second. Who's to say that if big Aaron Ramsdale started every game in goal, as we all thought he would at the beginning of last summer, they wouldn't have won the league. So it's very hard to prove a negative. They might have also come fifth and he might have had an absolute howler, and maybe Mikel Arteta was right, but probably a little bit disjustice on Aaron Ramsdale to say that Arteta got it right, because you never know. He didn't get the chance, did he? If he had played it, we'd have to see how it would have gone last season with Ramsdale and going in an alternate universe. We never will, so we'll just have to take Mikel's word for it. But David Raya, to be fair, has obviously done very well, and it would seem that it was a fair shout.
Yeah, he's not started bad, Raya, either. That save from Watkins back off the bar where he got up quickly at Villa Park at the weekend. They're the sort of games that potentially Villa are on top, Morgan Rogers running the show that Arsenal might have lost previously. And that was a massive save. And then they went on and scored fairly soon after and then went on to get a second. 3 points at Villa Park. Unreal result for them.
Got a score though, Ollie Watkins. Troy Deeney looked right. If you threw on goal, who you trust in? Tony or Watkins? Tony wouldn't have missed that.
Tomo, another transfer that looks set to happen. This one's been going from a Man United perspective the whole summer, and a need to bring in another midfielder, as United seem to need to do on a yearly basis, despite spending 50, 60, 70 mil each summer on a new player. But looks like Manuel Ugarte from PSG is going to get over the line. I think it's 40 million euros plus 10 million euros add-on. Obviously, Scott McTominay is going to Napoli now, which I think has freed up some money to make that happen. But obviously, Casemiro's staying at Man United, looks to be in a bit better form and better shape than last season. So what do you think Ugarte's role in the team's going to be moving forward, with obviously Bruno and Cobby likely to be in the other two positions?
Well, he'll be an improvement in terms of the squad, that's for sure. I won't lie and say I know too much about Ugarte, but and I think the excitement around his transfer has tempered slightly because he lost his place in that PSG team last year. But if you take last season out of the equation, and he's still only 23, remember, he was one of the brightest midfielders at Sporting. He's a bit of a sort of a dogs of war type midfielder. So when you consider that Casemiro had a terrible season last year, is not getting any younger. Okay, he's done slightly better in the first two games this season, and he looks like he's shifted a little bit of timber. But we definitely need someone alongside Casemiro in the long term, and Ugarte will certainly do that. And he will also certainly take the load off Casemiro, because not only did Casemiro look slow and lumbered and lethargic last year, but when we had all those injuries, he just played every single minute. He even played centre-back at some stages. And for someone who's played so much football as Casemiro, at 32 years old, he needs basically help. And hopefully Manuel Ugarte will provide that. And one thing about this transfer that I quite like is that it's clear for everyone all summer that he's basically held out for this United move. Since United come in for him at the start of the summer, he's basically said, no, I want to go there. And he's not entertained any other offers, which is always a nice sort of feeling from a fan's point of view. But then on the other side, maybe United are offering him a hell of a lot of wages. So it's a difficult one to analyse yet. But yeah, hopefully he comes in and does a good job and helps out where needed, because there's more games in Europa League this season, loads of games in Premier League, FA Cup, League Cup. So yeah, he'll definitely be needed.
And having to, as part of that, replace, obviously, McTominay, who might not be the best holding midfielder that's ever played the game, but did get plenty of game time at United last season and popped up with some important goals. I'm not sure that's Ugarte's game. I'm not saying he's going to replace those goals that McTominay left. But as an academy boy, Tomo McTominay, obviously, probably close to a couple hundred appearances for United overall. Disappointed to see him go. Or think that that's the kind of sentimental bias that United need to look past now and move players like him on who maybe just aren't quite up to it?
Well, two things can be true at the same time, can't they? Like, it is disappointing to see him go because he is a local lad. He's been at the club basically his whole life. And he is one of those players who puts in 120% every time he plays and all of those kind of things. And sort of back in at the Sir Alex Ferguson era, he'd be that kind of Darren Fletcher type squad player that you have. Phil Neville, Nicky Butt, these type of players who, yeah, okay, might not be your star man, but they'll be relied upon to play 25, 30 games a season and put in good shifts. But the same with the likes of John O'Shea, Phil Neville, Nicky Butt, Darren Fletcher. They get to the age of sort of 26, 27, like McTominay's got to, and they're still not like their number one starters and they want to move. So it's understandable that McTominay wants to play more football. And I think it's understandable that Man United want to sell him. He scored 10 goals all season last year. So he's obviously got a little bit of value to that. And that's the only, I guess, downside, I think, of selling McTominay is his threat when he comes on for the last 20 minutes when we need a goal. And he popped up with some important goals last year. So that's one thing I think we'll definitely miss. But I'm not too sentimental about McTominay leaving. No, I think it's sort of one of those sales and departures that is right for all parties.
And in that United midfield, Mason Mount has come out today. I mean, this is a sign of how injured he's been at his time in Man United. Rather than the club doing the press release about him, he asked to do it himself and posted it on his social media to say that he came off at half-time against Brighton and he's pulled his hamstring again. He's going to miss the next few games. Now, I've looked at that and thought, next few games, okay, maybe it's only a couple of weeks, but there's obviously an international break in there. So that could be another month or so out for Mason Mount. And he just started a run of games in the Prem. Obviously, we were playing Bruno a little bit further forward, but looks like he's going to continue where he left off last season with being you know, a game or two in and then a few weeks out. So United definitely need that reinforcement in the midfield. Christian Eriksen obviously getting no younger. He's being linked with a move away. So we definitely need the extra body in midfield. So it's a one-for-one replacement with McTominay, but I'd question whether United potentially needed another one in there. If there was a free transfer available, something like that.
But I just don't like the idea that you look Mason Mount's out for 5 weeks, or a couple games after the international break, sorry, and you go and buy someone. It's ridiculous. Just Toby Collier's had a good pre-season. Just promote him. I don't think you should be buying players for the sake of just because Mason Mount's going to miss a couple. What I will say about that Mason Mount injury, and one thing important to note, is that he was injured all season in his last year at Chelsea as well. And then Man United decided to pay him 200 grand a week on a 5-year contract and pay 60 million quid or 50 million quid, whichever it was, to a player who only had 1 year left on his Chelsea deal. Another disastrous sign-in that hopefully won't happen too often with this new regime in place.
No, hopefully not. Well, one other disastrous sign-in who's being linked with a move away is Jadon Sancho. And Lauro, in Jadon Sancho and obviously at Chelsea, Raheem Sterling, there's been talks of a potential swap deal there with Raheem Sterling going to United and Sancho to Chelsea, albeit apparently Arsenal are interested in Raheem Sterling now. Not too worried about Sancho and where he ends up, but Raheem Sterling, from your point of view, do you think that's a sign-in that an Arsenal or a Man United should get if he's available on a loan and don't have to cover all of his 300+k a week wages?
Yes, definitely. A talented player that has shown that he can do it in the Premier League for many, many years, still in his 20s, now with a massive point to prove. And I actually saw him come out recently and say that he wants to get back in the England setup. And I Googled him earlier. I was thinking, what is he, early 30s? No, he's 29. So there's still plenty of years left in Raheem Sterling. And obviously the kind of overview of his time at Chelsea is that it's been disappointed, but he still scored 15 goals for them in the 2 years that he's been there. And I think if he can go to a club that are crying out for another wide player, like probably Man United at the moment, I think it would be good for all parties. So, yeah, and the Jadon Sancho one's really difficult to comment on. You don't know what you're going to get with him, do you? He seemed to be a world beater again last year at Dortmund, following on from a traumatic season the year before, so God knows with him.
I don't want anything to do with Raheem Sterling. I don't want anything to do with him. I not because he's a bad player or anything. I don't think he's pulled up any trees for Chelsea. I don't understand any of this uproar that we've seen on social media and on TalkSport about how bad he's getting treated, when Enzo Maresca's just basically said, you're not for me. And that's fair enough, considering Raheem Sterling's been pretty poor for Chelsea. One club I think he would be perfect for is Arsenal. They need someone to be a backup to Bukayo Saka. And I know Raheem Sterling won't want to hear me say this, oh, you're going to be a backup to Bukayo Saka, but they need someone to be a backup to Bukayo Saka. And actually, at this moment in time, Martinelli's not putting up any trees. Trossard, he's not really trusted to start all the games. So actually, there's an argument to say that Raheem Sterling would definitely play on the left-hand side as well. So he would probably improve Arsenal more than Man United. I don't want him at Man United.
I think that pretty much sums it up.
Arsenal are linked to Kingsley Coman as well. So they obviously think that they want someone to come in and, you say, provide that cover for the other wide men. And potentially, you know, Raheem Sterling could be thinking, if he can go and score 10 goals for Arsenal this season, that he potentially might get another Premier League winners medal there. So be interested to see where he ends up.
Hang on, sorry. So Arsenal were crying out for someone like Raheem Sterling. Who is it pulling up trees for Man United at the moment where he's just not going to get in and where he can't be a viable option?
Can I distance myself from Tomo's comments? I'd have multiple Premier League winning and 100 club Raheem Sterling at Man United.
That's what I just think that there's no space for him in the United squad. We've got like six or seven wingers. I'm saying Arsenal don't have that amount of wingers, do they? They've got Bukayo Saka on the right wing, but they've got Martinelli and Trossard on the left wing. That's it.
Do you have six or seven wingers that are better than Raheem Sterling?
But that's not the point.
Try and improve your squad. It's not just about having quantity of player. If you can bring in a Raheem Sterling, maybe the sixth or seventh can go out on loan, or you can get rid of him. You know?
Yeah, I don't think he would. He's pulled up any trees for Chelsea. I think there's an argument to say, even though he's 29, he's been playing first team football since he was 16. He's played over 400 games. There's an argument to say he peaked at 23, 24, and he's basically past his best now.
Okay. So who is pulling up trees on the wide areas for Man United?
Yeah, no one.
Right. Okay, so that can't be a reason. Raheem Sterling has found himself a bit of a flat one, but he did brilliantly at Liverpool and Manchester City, and it's only 2 years, and it's probably only really last year where we've seen a big decline. And the fact that he's still 29, I think, suggests that there's a second wind to come from Raheem Sterling.
I think in United's recent history, actually, signing 28, 29-year-old elite level players, the likes of Casemiro, Rafael Varane, hasn't gone so well for Man United. I wouldn't want to bring in a Raheem Sterling at 29 on 250 grand a week, whatever he would want, at all, to be honest. Not for me.
Tomo, so Jadon Sancho might leave to go to, say, Juventus, if that was a viable option, tomorrow. So you'd rather have nobody coming, because we're not going to bring any other winger in, than Raheem Sterling on loan to add to Rashford, who's not scoring goals, Garnacho, who's obviously very raw, Ahmad, who's very young, and Anthony, who's very shit. Would you not have Raheem Sterling for a year, not paying his full wages, a proven Prem and international goal scorer who can play across the front three?
Yeah, the only way I would almost half accept it was if it's a loan with no option to buy. I don't want him on a 4-year contract. Don't want him on a 5-year contract. I think it would be another of a Casemiro Varane situation.
You don't have to sign him on a 4 or 5 year contract. You know, I'm sure Raheem, this is what I mean about having a point to prove. Like, he's still young enough to get back in the England setup, and he's had a dodgy year or so. But we know that he's got bags of quality. It's not like he's a racehorse that's pulled up lame. He's just had a dip or a spell in his career that hasn't quite gone to plan. But the previous 10 seasons, he was almost a world beater, and he's got multiple Premier Leagues to show for that. And what, 400 appearances combined between Manchester City and Liverpool. So to say that you'd rather stick with Mount, who never plays, and Anthony, who's just appallingly bad, Rashford, who maybe you've got difference of opinion, but also looks like he's over the past his best. Garnacho, who I know scored an overhead last year, but I don't see that as any reason not to bring him. Raheem Sterling, just on the basis that he's the same age as Casemiro, and I think that's a wildly distorted view on a really good sort of professional for England and Man City and Liverpool over the years, and I think United would be lucky to have him.
Well, we will see what Raheem decides or what clubs come in for him on deadline day, but I'm expecting him to get a big move, and I think he wants to stay in the Prem, and I think it will come down to one of Arsenal or United if they're willing to stump up a percentage of his wages that Chelsea will allow him to leave to get some of those wages off the books. But yeah, deadline day tomorrow, so we'll see if there's any other big deals that happen alongside that as well. Obviously still got the likes of Ivan Toney, who needs his future sorting as well, so I'm sure there'll be some big late drama that will keep us all busy tomorrow. Tom, I want to touch on the Carabao Cup round 3 draw. Obviously, we had the second round of matches last night, penalty shootout between Forest and Newcastle, and then the draw took place after. But for some reason, they've decided that the 6 teams that have qualified for Europe will be automatically drawn out, or they'll do a draw before to then work out whether they're home or away. But basically, they're almost like seeded in the draw where they can't meet each other. Can you shine a bit of light on that as to why that decision's been taken?
Yeah, because the Champions League, Europa League and Conference League has 2 extra games now. So those clubs cannot... they can't face each other in the early rounds, which means that... basically, it's just help the teams in Europe. So they don't face the big clubs in the early rounds, and it helps with the fixture congestion. Do I think it's a, well, it's obviously a good idea, but do I think it's the beginning of the end of the Carabao Cup? Probably. It feels like it's just moving that way every single year, getting rid of replays, they're getting rid of extra time, they're getting rid of this, they're getting rid of that. And it feels like sort of one thing's sort of steeped on top of another. They did announce this last year, but it's sort of gone a little bit under the radar. And I only just noticed it when they put the seedings up like last night during the draw. And I was like, fuck's going on here? But yeah, it's basically because they've expanded the UEFA competitions.
What difference does it make with United playing Barnsley and City playing Watford then? Than United and City meeting each other? Is it just to allow them to play weaker squads because they're less likely to get a big tie? They're playing the same amount of games, right? Is it just to do with less chance of having a big fixture and needing to play your main players?
Basically, yeah. So you basically play weaker teams in lower leagues, and you can basically play your second string 11 plus a couple of youngsters. And also in terms of the Carabao Cup, what it guarantees is that you get the bigger clubs, or it doesn't guarantee it, but it's a more inevitability to get the bigger clubs go through to the later stages. And then you've got the likes of Man United playing Liverpool in a semi-final, Man City playing Arsenal in a semi-final, which I guess the Carabao and the EFL, that's what they want, because you've got the big ties in the later rounds.
Just also on the Carabao Cup, someone made an interesting point on Twitter yesterday. Carabao is an energy drink, isn't it? Has anyone ever seen anyone drink a can of Carabao? How on earth are they funding this competition? They've been here for about 10 years now.
They're a Thai-based energy drink, so they must be big in Thailand.
Yeah, I've one of the replies was they're huge in Asia, but how that translates to the Mickey Mouse Cup over here, I do not know. But above my head, business is business.
Do you remember one of the rounds last year, the draw was done in Thailand? And I think it was done at like 3 a.m. for like one of the early rounds. And
what, like Adrian Durham in Bangkok, was it?
Yeah, or something like that, yeah. Just absolute Mickey Mouse stuff.
Fair days.
Yeah, I bet he put his hand straight up Durham for that. Oh, maybe he's got to Thailand, do you? No, I'll head out. No, good point. Haven't seen a can of Carabao, but at the same time, wouldn't want it to be the Monster Energy Cup either. Right, boys, let's move on then. And I want to just quickly touch on the EFL. And Laura, we obviously spoke last week about Leeds, spoke about losing Somerville, Kamara, Ruta and Gray. And will the money be reinvested? But looks like some signings starting to come in at Elm Road.
Yeah, I think the first thing is it's always a happier place after a win. And obviously we went to Hillsborough on Friday night and beat Sheffield Wednesday 2-0, which, you know, a lot of people fancy Sheffield Wednesday pre-season. They haven't started amazingly well, but obviously Danny Wall got them going last season. But I think to go there and get 3 points has kind of settled everyone down a little bit. We've brought in Manor Solomon, who I think is a fantastic forward. I thought he was brilliant at Fulham. I remember him playing against us for Fulham in the Premier League a couple of seasons ago. Obviously couldn't get in at Tottenham, but there's no disgrace in that because they've got some fantastic attacking players. I think that's a real coup for the Championship, and he's a player I'm really happy to have. And I think when you look at having him, the lad whose name I can't pronounce that we've brought in, and keeping Willie Nonto is like a new signing as well. Because if Somerville and Rutter go, you're sort of expecting Willie to follow. I think those boys with Matteo Joseph having a breakout season, the likes of Joel Pirro, I think we're going to have more than enough. However, I think we'd like another something somewhere. And obviously we've been in for Gus Hamer a couple of times this week. And I'm hoping that there's going to be a little bit of a carrot come the end of deadline day tomorrow. And we might just prize him away from Bramall Lane, because that would be the missing piece of a jigsaw puzzle for me to really cement us as favourites in this league. But I think Sheffield won 18 million. A lot of the Leeds fans are saying, well, we've bought in 100 this year. So please just let us have him.
I guess with Red Bull coming into the Leeds, on the theme of energy drinks, with Red Bull coming, bringing Leeds into the Red Bull group, there must be some funds that are starting to become available for them as well that potentially mean Leeds could you know, people know they've got some money that have come in from the sales they've done. So maybe you just got to pay slightly over the odds for someone like a Gus Hamer, with the thought that that might be the move that seals you the promotion back to the Prem, and financially it's then been worth it.
Exactly. I mean, it's all very well bringing out our retro badge to put on the yellow away kit. But if you're going to take £110 million worth of player profit or player sales this summer so far out of three players, that's not even counting Glenn Kamara. I'm not sure what he went. I think that was another £10 million as well that he went for. You've got to reinvest. I think Manuel Solomon is a loan. Jada Bogle that we bought from Sheffield United was £5 million. Yes. Well, whether Gus Hamer's £10 million or £20 million, it really doesn't matter to the Leeds fans. Just bring him in. That would be a statement midfielder. A statement signing, and I think more importantly, actually give us a tangible chance of automatically qualifying for promotion this season back to the Premier League, which we need, and that will obviously help Red Bull and the 49ers in their mission to try and successfully run a football club in this country, as many Americans are trying to do at the moment.
That Manuel Solomon, I think, is going to be a really good signing. He was so good at Fulham. He went to Tottenham, got a couple of injuries, and then was the subject of quite a lot of conspiracy theories for the rest of the season for why he wasn't playing. It involved the Israel and Palestine conflict. He'll obviously need a couple of games to get up and running, but I feel like he's too good for the Championship. So definitely be a top signing for them.
Yeah, as do I. And just the other player that I couldn't pronounce a minute ago is Largi Ramanzani, which a lot of Leeds fans are really excited about. I think he started at United, maybe. But I've never, ever heard of him or seen him play. So I'll wait till I do before I pass judgment.
And then, Laurie, just on another title rival for Leeds, Burnley. Obviously, they started the season great guns. They lost to Sunderland 1-0. But probably more importantly for them, they've lost some big players now. Obviously, Wilson Odegaard went to Tottenham earlier in the window. You've added Sander Berge going to Fulham. Daro Shea and the goalkeeper Muric have both gone to Ipswich. Zarori's gone to Lens. Scott Twine to Bristol City. Charlie Taylor's gone to Southampton in the Prem. Lesser playing players for them, like Valt Weghorst has gone back to Ajax. What are you thinking if you're Scott Parker now with where your squad was a couple of weeks ago?
Quite similar to this time last season with Leeds, where we knew that we were going to have a big outflux of players, and it was all about how you deal with that and who you can bring in to reshape the squad, if you like. And I think they brought in Jadon Anthony, who would be probably quite a good signing on the wing for them. They've also brought in Hannibal Medri, the guy that used to play for United. I think he had a good season at Luton possibly, but they're going to need one or two others, aren't they? And I think there's been murmurs this week already from the Burnley fans that they can see Scott Parker walking out. We know he's got previous with clubs that haven't backed him to the right degree. If they've only got one day left to sort out the big hole that's been left with a lot of late in the window outgoings, it could be tricky times, particularly when they started the season on fire and Burnley fans have sort of been given a taste of what could have been if they stayed with so many of those top players. But I mean, some of them have come out of nowhere as well. The Wilson Odegaard to Tottenham. I mean, I actually think he's going to play quite a few minutes for Spurs, but I never saw that one coming in a million years. And like you say, some of maybe the lesser trendy players that you referred to, even the likes of Goodmanson, who's been an absolute rock in the midfield for them for the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, the first and second stints in the Premier League, he was brilliant for Vinny Kompany as well, until they obviously fell out, it looks like, in that training video on the Sky documentary. But they'll feel the effects of that. And interesting for Burnley. But I think that this is probably the reason why a lot of people weren't picking them to go straight back up at the start of the season, because you need to see who goes, who comes in, and then reassess. Leeds almost got it bang on last season. Burnley have got a day to do so.
I've just seen in the last half hour as well that Amdouni's gone to Benfica, who was another player that obviously I imagine would have been high on Scott Parker's radar to keep to help fire them back up. So another player out. So they've got a massive 24 hours now.
I saw Lyle Foster as well to Ipswich, maybe. So, and yeah. I don't know if that's happened, but there's still players there that are being linked and might even go tomorrow. So I expect, you know, some of the clarets are hoping there's going to be a minibus full of decent signings turn up at Turf Moor tomorrow. Otherwise, they're going to be left with their proverbial Harambe in their hands.
Yeah, Cole Osho has been the subject of interest from Premier League clubs as well, who looks a very, very good player.
Yeah, he actually looked like their best player in the Prem, I thought, Cole Osho. I think it's Wolves that are courting him. And I think Burnley rejected a bid and he's come out and said, no, I want to go. So that doesn't bode well.
Let's hope for Burnley it's not a case of them getting a tweet like the Leeds tweet saying, Leeds fans, don't go to bed yet. There's still some transfer business to be done. Kept you up till 10 to 12 to tell you Matt Smith had gone on loan, didn't they?
Correct. Gone on loan to Fulham. He retired last week. Good servant to the English game, Matt Smith. Made a lot out of his career after sort of playing for fun, really, on the side of uni. Good target man. And I actually wish he'd come to Yeovil just to see out his twilight days. But good luck to Matt Smith.
Just before we move on as well, Murph, a little quick positive note on Sunderland, who have obviously, that win against Burnley was made it 3 out of 3. They've not conceded yet. I know it's early days, but I've always had a bit of a soft spot for Sunderland since the documentary. They've got a really loyal fan base. They've been through a lot up there and that neck of the woods. And if you look at their centre mids this season, they've got this 17-year-old lad called Chris Rigg, who looks like the absolute dog's bollock. And he's playing alongside Joe Bellingham, who signed a new contract in the summer. He was fully expecting to leave, I think, because he's Bellingham's younger brother. But actually, he's unbelievable in his own right, and he's still only 18. So Sunderland's got two young English teenagers absolutely bossing it in centre mid. So exciting times. The only disappointing thing, I guess, but it was to be expected, was they have sold Jack Clark to Ipswich.
I thought that was a great move for Ipswich for the price. It was only 15 mil for Jack Clark. We know a Sunderland fan and he was pulling his hair out at that figure with some of the figures that get bandied about now for players and your 25, 30 mil players, what that gets you now. I think Jack Clark, you know, linked with some bigger Prem clubs previously. I think that's a bit of a steal for Ipswich. I don't know what his contract situation was or if he was holding them ransom, but I think Sunderland would be absolutely gutted to lose him for that figure. Not much going on in League One, League Two, boys, so far. It's the early days in the season so far. A few teams to call out from League One. Stockport won again. Louis Barry, formerly of Barcelona, scoring again. Huddersfield and Charlton remain in perfect records as well. So three teams there, all on 9 points after three games. But Birmingham, who I think have signed their 14th player this week, with Lyndon Dykes, who's obviously an established championship striker at QPR and place for the national team Scotland as well, signing for 1 million. So the Birmingham owners are not messing about in trying to get back up in League One. But it looks like there's some teams that are going to put up one hell of a fight for that when you start to think about the likes of Wrexham as well in that league. So interesting to see how Birmingham do and how much money they've outlaid this season, whether their financial model allows for them to not go straight back up, because it's not a given down in those lower leagues.
Did you just mention they've signed Alfie May as well?
Alfie May was earlier in the window, wasn't he? Charlton, who obviously joint top of the league on 9 points, lost him. He's proven got bagsman, but added Lyndon Dykes to that as well. So they really want to go up. Laurie, I want to finish with National League and Yeovil. Obviously, last week we previewed you two both heading up north and you made the long trip up to Gateshead on Friday, which I think wasn't without its traffic issues. But you did finally make it to Gateshead for lunchtime kickoff on Saturday. How was it?
Weird place, just on the outskirts of Newcastle. This is the best way to describe the ground and the viewing experience of this game. Someone I was with actually described it like this, and I thought it was perfect. You know when you go swimming and there's like the viewing area, you can go and watch, you can go and sit down like with the vending machines and just watch the people in the pool. It felt like that. It felt like you were like some sort of leisure complex watching some athletics unfold in front of you, but this just happened to be football. Very, very peculiar vibe. Everyone was in one stand. The other three ends outside of the running track were empty. And really sort of weird place to play football. And it was a weird result as well. Like, we kind of played really well, but got 3-1. And you're sort of left thinking, 18-hour round trip for 0 points. hopefully it'll get better on Bank Holiday Monday when we return and play Rochdale at home, and it didn't. We lost 1-0. So I feel like I've made an awful lot of effort this weekend following Yeovil Town to be rewarded with a big fat 0 points. But lovely, lovely people up in Gateshead. Good hospitality up there for the Pyramid Podcast. We thank them again for their sandwiches and their drinks and their offering of dessert at halftime. But the guy with the broad Geordie accent come up afterwards and just said, "Cheers, lads, for the 3 points." And I thought, fuck, you know, got a hell of a drive back now.
And then obviously on to Bank Holiday Monday and Rochdale home. I managed to make it to that game and thought Yeovil were really bright for an hour. Looked like they had too much for Rochdale. It's just a matter of time. But potentially learning here, Lauro, that if you don't take your chances or don't get that goal while you're on top, maybe less so last season in more regional football, but certainly back in the National League, you're going to get punished.
Yeah, it's really weird because we've lost 3 games so far this season. And Mark Cooper said today in his interview, we don't feel like we should have lost any of them. And I agree with him. I actually spoke to him after Gateshead outside the ground. And he was sort of like, how on earth did we lose that 3-1? And it's literally just that ruthless streak, isn't it? It's slightly worrying in the sense that last time we were in this league, it seemed to be talking about a ruthless streak all season. And it was goals that were letting us down. But I just think, as you just alluded to there, if you look at how we're playing in a lot of the games that we've been playing, I think the dreaded XG stats that I don't like will probably be in our favour. And a lot of the expectation from the stats would be that we'd be winning those games. So I think there's positives to take from that. We've obviously got 6 points, which is a average, but probably fairly good return from a newly promoted team to the National League. And I think Cooper's also alluded to a few new additions to come in. But some good sides in this league, you know, like Rochdale are an obviously ex-EFL team. Gateshead should have been in the playoffs last year, but couldn't because of that ridiculous ground fiasco that they had. Their manager's Rob Elliott, the former Newcastle goalkeeper. So there's some big teams, big names, and it's going to be a difficult division for anyone to win. But no one's having it all their own way. No one's won all the games and no one's running away with it. So we're in with a shout and, positive for the next few fixtures.
And just looking ahead to the weekend, a trip to America, take on Boston. They obviously looked like they were going to be whipping boys in the league, didn't they? But they've backed that up, or followed that up, I should say, with a win on Bank Holiday weekend, which maybe means it's going to be a slightly trickier fixture than first thought, but potentially the Yeovil needing 3 points there.
Yeah, it'd be the first game that I'm not going to. I mean, I put Boston into the sat-nav, the English one, and my God, I think it was like 6 hours. It could not be further away. It's like the other side of the country and it's up north. So I'm not making the trip this weekend, and we're going without Morgan Williams, who got concussed at the weekend and now from protocol has to miss 12 days. So be an interesting one. Like you said, they look like they were going to be the whipping boys, but then they go and beat York. But that just speaks to how open the league is and how anyone can beat anyone. So like Mark Cooper says, you've got to take each game individually, each game on its own merits, and try and earn the 3 points. And so far we've lost 3-1-2. So hopefully we can even that up and then maybe get back to Hewish Park the following week and get on the right side of the balance.
Great stuff. I got one final question before we finish up. And that's for you, Tomo. Did you triple captain Erling Haaland in Fantasy Premier League?
No, I didn't. And yeah, I'll live to regret that, I'm sure.
17 points. We did warn you. Shout out to Demin FC, by the way, who was leading last week on 92 points. He's followed that up with 100 points in the second week and now is out in front on 192 in through 2 game weeks, which would mean if he was in a league with just the 3 of us, he would be 62 points clear because we got 9 points between us on 130 down to 121. So embarrassing start for us so far.
Cheers.
Boys, that's all we got time for. We'll be back next week. We'll look at what deals have happened on deadline day, another week of Prem and EFL action, including that Man United Liverpool game. But pleasure as always. Cheers, chaps.
Cheers, lads. 1, 2, 3.